Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my producer, Jason DeFilippo. This discussion also includes my friend Gabriel Mizrahi, and we're talking with my friend Charles, who actually escaped by himself from North Korea twice. This is really an incredible show. If you haven't heard part one, go back and listen to part one that we released last week. It is an incredible, and it's a long story, but it is just absolutely fascinating and incredible. And those of you who don't know much about North Korea, again, you know, as I mentioned before, you go to prison for folding a newspaper the wrong way. There are people who are in labor camps who die there because they couldn't see very well because they were malnourished and they sat on a magazine or newspaper with the leader's face on it. I mean, it's that kind of repressive society. And Charles is a really good storyteller. He stayed strong throughout his whole ordeal. He's got all these crazy experiences both inside of and during his escape from North Korea. And we go into great detail here on these two episodes with Charles. So I hope you enjoy this one as much as I enjoyed recording it. Absolutely fascinating. And if you want to learn how I managed to book all these great people and manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our level one course, which is free. That's over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. And don't forget, we've always got worksheets for the show, so you can make sure you get all the takeaways from the guest, all the practicals and everything else. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. So now for the thrilling conclusion here with Charles Rue.
I worked in the mine about a year and I realized, you know, that it was my time to escape North Korea again. And, you know, I know how hard it is, you know, escaping North Korea would be without any money or, like, food, you know. Because, like, I wasn't really good at saving money, even though I was planning on saving some money. But
you didn't save a lot. You spent it on...
Just, like, spending on, like, you know, like, partying.
Will Smith DVDs.
Will Smith DVDs.
Yeah, right. I was a big fan of Will Smith. So he's really inspirational to North Koreans.
Will Smith is inspirational to North Koreans?
Yeah, yeah. Like, at least, like, for me, you know. For me and my friends, I want to be a Will Smith, you know. No. But yeah, James Bond, you know.
Sure.
You know, and I knew how hard escaping North Korea would be without any money or food. And I knew that if I was caught, you know, I could be killed. But those risks overweighted working in the dark coal mine every day until it was my turn to the limp or die. So one morning, instead of entering the mine, I walked up the path and began running. You know, I ran off from the coal mine, and I was living on the street for 3 months. So I escaped coal mine in 2011, May of 2011. And then on a humid day in August, I was lying down on a hillside. I have no plans whatsoever. I was just homeless because I didn't want to die in a coal mine. I escaped, but I have no way how I'm going to get to China. But I was lying down on a hillside, and in the distance, I saw a train come to stop. And people were exiting out of the train cars, middle of nowhere. I'm like, I wonder if I can steal something. And I walked down the path and I looked at the sign. It says Pyongyang, from Pyongyang to Haesan. Now, Haesan is like the border town, right? I'm like, oh my God, this is my chance. I need to get on that train. So I walked into like the crowds and I tried to like blend in and I was pretending I was belong there. And then as soon as the power came back, or as soon as the train was trying to move again, people were trying to get into the train, and I joined the line. And the guard stopped me and asked me, like, oh, can I see your documents? Can I see your birth certificate? I'm like, oh, shoot. And I lied that, oh, my mother had them and that she was already on the train. And he nodded, and I headed straight for the train bathroom to hide. For the next 2 days, I was hiding on the train. You know, sometimes I have to climb out of the window, hide on the top of the train, or sometimes I have to come down and sit on the hitch between the two cars to avoid the guards. And if I was caught, I'll be ended up in a labor camp somewhere, most likely. In the middle of the, I think it was a night, yeah. I was almost the border town when the hand of guard grabbed the back of my neck and dragged me to a holding cell on the train.
A guard found you?
Yeah, he found me. Yeah, on the train. Because it was like a midnight, and I was so cold. And I was like sleeping in the like a nearby bathroom. And then suddenly, like, I felt something kicking in my back.
Mm.
And then the guard dragged me to a holding cell on the train. And there are two other boys in the room who have been caught too. And as the guard locked the door to the cell, he told us that we'll be handed over to the authorities at the next stop.
Is the crime taking the train or trying to escape? They don't know that you're trying to escape yet.
They don't know that, yeah.
It's just illegal to ride
the train. Yeah, illegal to ride the train. So like, oh, you'll be handed over to the police at the next stop. And then, you know, I thought about like how terrible the detention center have been, you know, like long days of manual labor, sleepless night that I've, you know, like spent remembering the rules and the constant feelings of hunger. I refused to let that happen again. So as the train began to slow down for the next stop, I saw a window was unlocked. So I pushed it open and squeezed out of the small opening. And I jumped off the moving train, rolled into a ditch, and began sprinting for some nearby trees. I walked for like hours, illegally catched a second train, and 2 days later, I finally made it to the border town.
You jumped out of the moving train.
No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal.
Because the train was preparing to stop, so it wasn't that fast.
Okay.
And then like on the side, it was like a grass, and if it was a hard rock, and I'll probably die. I'm probably broke something, but I'm fine, you know.
I love how to you this is not that big of a deal, but to us, I can't even imagine.
I would not jump out of a moving train. I don't care how slow it is.
A moving train, you're stuck in a room that a guard has put you in. I think I just try to understand the psychology of that, because I'd be like, no, they put us here. This is where I have to stay here.
I'll explain myself when I talk to the police.
But at this point, you've been through so much. You're just like, you know what's going on.
Yeah, I know what to do, you know, because like, that's like regular day life for North Korean like homeless, mm-hmm. you know, because they get caught all the time and they were sent to like the orphanage. But a lot of kids escape orphanage because that's like worse than living on a street, because they don't feed you in orphanage. So a lot of orphanage kids would escape, like, you know, from the orphanage.
So you're in the border town now.
Yeah,
right?
Now I'm finally in the border town, right? And then when I first escaped North Korea in 2008, I made a few friends at the Haesan City, and then I went into his house, right? Into like 5 a.m. in the morning, and like, hey, you know, like, I'm trying to skip again. Will you come with me? Because I needed somebody, you know, because this, before in 2008, when I escaped, I had somebody in my back watching over me. But this time, like, I'm completely on my own. You know, like, I don't know how I'm going to cross, you know, I don't know how I'm going to like get around the river, you know, because there is like rules, you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can only allow to go during that time. Otherwise, if you wander around the river, you're going to get shot. Because like they think of you as like escapee, you know.
And you don't have the protection of the broker.
I don't have the protection anymore. So I was like trying to like convince this kid to escape with me, right? And he said, yes, he's going to escape with me. I'm like, oh my God, thank goodness, you know. Because that kid knew like really well around the border. So, yeah, we are planning on escaping the next day at night. But, like, this kid goes out and comes back and saying, like, I don't think I can escape with you anymore because I met this chick. You know, she, so, like, in North Korea, like, it was August, right? So there's, like, a chestnut farm in the mountain, like a wild chestnut, and then you sell it at the black market, and then you go camping there to collect the chestnut. But this guy knows one girl who he has crush on her, right? And he finds out that this girl is going to chestnut farm, and then she invited him to go with her. And he's like, dude, this is my only chance to get to know her.
God.
I'm like,
what guys will do just to get a
right? I'm like, now I'm sitting here, I'm like, I really hope that girl was worth it, dude.
Yeah. Should I leave the most oppressive regime on earth? Yeah, but I might get some at this chestnut farm, so...
I might
Sorry, bro.
No,
I might get laid at the chestnut farm.
He skipped escaping for a date.
He better have married that girl.
Yeah, I...
Do you know?
I'm not
You're
sure.
No idea.
I'm not sure. I have no idea, like, what she have done, but...
Did you feel like you had to ask somebody else for help because doing it alone is scary and having somebody with you makes it more possible, or did you just need him to tell you where to go?
He would be like mental like guide, right? I mean, like having
mental guide.
Yeah, having somebody next to me, you know, mm-hmm. even though we get caught, mm-hmm. you know, we have like better explanation, right? Oh, we're just friends, you know, wandering around. It's just like, oh, like we just, you know, escaped, you know, and like no big deal. But like by myself, like I have to explain myself, right? So I guess like having him next to me, I guess it like gave me a lot of, you know, like motivation, right? To like go a little further. But for myself, I didn't know if I could do it, you know, but I'm already determined, you know, I'm not, even though I'm going to die, like I don't want to die in there, you know, I'm going to die here. So in the afternoon, the next day, right? In the afternoon, I walk into the river that divides North Korea and China, which is Yellow River. And then I hid in the tall grass for, I don't know, until the darkness. And I couldn't really move. I had to just remain like this position, like a, looks like a shrimp, you know, because it wasn't windy, you know, and the grass was like whole still, you know, and if they see it's moving, cause they're a flashlight, you know, mm-hmm. if it's this moving, they're going to come down and check, right? So I couldn't move at all. It was finally dark. And I thought it was my time. And then I slowly walked into the water. And then I was like walking. And like my brain is completely blank. Like I don't think about anything. But just I just feel the cold water. You know, it's so cold. And like my heart is like beating in my throat too. And then halfway into the river, I slipped on a rock and I let out a scream.
Oh, man.
Because the water current was so fast. And like, I couldn't do anything about it, right? And I think it let out a gasp. I wasn't screaming, but I let out a gasp. And then immediately, a floodlight was on my back. And I heard a soldier screaming at me.
Oh, man.
He's like, Ya, 이 새끼야, 안 돌아와. 안 돌아오면 쏜다. 쏘라. 쏘라. He's like, You bastard, come back here. Stop, you know, or I will shoot. And like, at that point, I'm like, I'm dead anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if I stop here, I'm going to drown. Like, I was dead either way. Either he will shoot me, or I will obey and return to the shore, only to be shipped off to labor camp, right? And I decided not to stop, and I kept waiting ahead. And like each step like took me further away from North Korea and closer to dream of my freedom, which is China. But the guard was kept screaming at me, but he never pulled the trigger.
Hmm.
And then 5 minutes later, because the thing was like the river was like this way, right? River current was like this way, but the current was so fast. So if I left from here, I ended up here, right?
Down the bank.
Yeah, down river, like yeah. Further down. Right. Cause like, he was like, keep like chasing me. And then I arrived at there. And then I went into the cornfield. Corn? Like there's like a big corn farm. And I
You're
went
in China
there.
Now.
I'm in China now. And then like I made it.
So the current took you faster than he could run.
Yeah, he could run.
So then you ran into
a
cornfield.
So, like he got lost. He got lost track of me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I guess the part of the reason that he didn't shoot is that he doesn't know where I am.
Yeah.
He lost.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't sound like compassion. It sounds like it's like, where the hell did this guy go?
Yeah, where the hell did he go? Yeah.
So now you're in a cornfield and you're running, hiding.
You know, I catch my breath and I took my old clothes and
Wring them out.
Yeah.
Wring them out.
And then like, I'm just like sitting there like stunned, you know, like, oh my God, I just did it.
And they don't chase you into China.
No, they can't. Like, it's actually illegal to cross the river. Even though bullet, they shoot, right? Mm-hmm. If the, like, legally, on a legal term, if the bullet lands on China, that's a war.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so they can't shoot across the river?
They can't shoot in the river because that's not China, that's not North Korea. So between the river, you're not allowed to shoot. It's a law.
Mm-hmm.
But North Korea doesn't care anyway. Because they shoot anyway, and they kill people anyway. That's what I heard, like, when I was in, like, the refugee camp. Because a lot of people, that's actually, like, a law in the law. You know, like, you can't shoot the person between the river because that's, like, nobody's land, the river.
No man's land, yeah.
Yeah, no man's land because it's in border. I never heard a gunshot, you know, and now I'm in a cornfield, like, think about where I'm going to go.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Charles Rue. We'll be back right after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator, or HostGator, as I often call it in my head. The world has gone mobile, and that means your website has to go mobile as well. It's really hard to make a website look great on both a computer and a tablet and a phone. And you can hire a designer, but it's going to cost you. And that's why we recommend HostGator's website builder. There's over 100 mobile-friendly templates, so your site's going to look great on any device, phone, computer, whatever. And you can create a professional-looking and feature-packed website. There's no coding, no like, oh, I forgot a space here, so the whole thing's sideways. None of that stuff. And there's a ton of add-ons for SEO. If you don't know what that is, you need that add-on. There's also a PayPal shopping cart stuff so people can buy stuff from your website. And they guarantee the thing's going to be up 99.9% of the time. They also have support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And if you're not satisfied, cancel within 45 days for a complete refund. No baloney. HostGator is also giving our listeners up to 62% off all their packages for new users. So go to HostGator or HostGator.com/Jordan right now to sign up. That's HostGator.com/Jordan. Support for the Jordan Harbinger Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make, but today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. And that's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, your assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualified for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then, once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender.
To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Jordan. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/advertisers. We also have an Alexa skill, so you can get inspirational and educational clips from the show in your daily briefing. Go to jordanharbinger.com/Alexa or search for Jordan Harbinger in the Alexa app. Now back to the show with our guest, Charles Rue.
Yeah, what's the plan now? You're just like in a hitchhike.
My original plan was just living in China, you know, because I knew that like I couldn't find my dad because I know that he's far away, you know. But like my only hope, like at that time, was like, okay, I'm gonna find some city because I can't stay here because I found a city, but that city was like full of like Chinese police, you know, trying to catch North Koreans. So like, I couldn't stay there. So I have to like manage, I have to find a way to get away. So I'm walking. I don't know where I'm going.
No money.
No money, no food, nothing else. Only thing that I have is like almost like faded away, like shoes, you know, like almost like a fell apart shoes, poor clothes. I'm walking. And I walked in China for 3 days. I didn't know where I was going without any water or food. And I was like really hungry. I was dehydrated and I was exhausted. Like really, really only hope that kept me going, you know, was finding a residential district, you know, and just finding some water, some bread, you know, and just staying there, pretending I'm homeless, you know, just begging for food, begging for money. And if I just live like that, I'm still free, you know, because I can do whatever I want. You know, I don't have to risk my life working in a coal mine, you know, just to get paid 3 kilograms of rice, right? Finally, my feet got blisters and it started bleed. It bled. And I can't walk anymore. I'm hungry. I'm exhausted. And I started regretting. Like, why did I left North Korea? If I was in coal mine, I was to get fed. I was to have a place to sleep. I was to have some money in my pocket. I was to have fun with my friend. And then I really thought about, you know, like, should I go back?
Oh, man.
Should I turn back?
That's how bad it was.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. You know, should I turn back? Like, it's like middle of like really nowhere. It's like nothing else but like forest.
So you're in the you're not walking on a road. You're just.
I'm not walking on a road. I'm like walking in a road, but like there was a side road too. But I'm just following the road in a forest
off to the side.
Yeah,
so that nobody
nobody sees me, right?
And you don't speak Chinese,
right? I don't speak Chinese. Right, I speak a little bit of Chinese, like broken Chinese.
Broken Chinese. But this is like scary.
Yeah, it's really scary. And then at one point, yeah, so like I don't care anymore because I'm almost dying. Like 3 days, it's been 3 days without any food. I'm dying anyways. So I just lie down on the road. Like do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. And then I'm religious. I'm Christian.
I knew this was coming. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, sorry. But I was like, this is why he goes to church now.
Yeah, I'm religious. And then I pray to God. Because I met a pastor when I was in China for the first time in 2008. And he came to our house, gave me some Bible, and he gave me some money. Cool. Christians give out money.
Yeah, this religion is awesome.
This was the first time you went to China.
Yeah, first time in China.
You were going to church back then?
No, I wasn't going to church, but he came to our house and he prayed for me. Mm-hmm. And then like when I was in like a refugee, when I was in the detention center, I prayed a lot too. Like I wasn't praying, right? I was having like communication. Like I was like talking, like in my like mind, right? Talking to like, guess God, you know, I keep talking. And then, yeah, in China, I was so desperate, you know. And then I was shouting. I was literally like crying and shouting like, why, you know, why? And I prayed like, I didn't want it to die like this, you know. And I cried and cried until I became more dehydrated. I couldn't cry anymore. And then like 10 to 20 minutes later, a Chinese dude riding a motorcycle. And then he passed by me, and then he stops, and he turns back, and he came to me, and he sees me lying down on the ground, and like, are you from North Korea?
Oh, wow.
Like, 你来 Chosin? Yeah, Chosin, right? I was like, 对, no, 我爸爸是中国人, and like, I told him, like, my dad is Chinese. Yeah, Chinese, and like, he's like, yeah, get on the motorcycle,
yeah.
So we rode like a couple of hours. I don't know. I think it must be like 12 hours. And then we got to his place and he gave me medication. He gave me food. He gave me shoes. He gave me clothes. He gave me place to sleep overnight. And then next morning, he connected me to a South Korean missionary. And then he was like, oh, like, are you trying to go to South Korea? I'm like, I'm trying to find my father here. Cause like at the time, like I wasn't thinking of going to South Korea, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I'm looking for my father here. And it's like, oh, like if I give you money and if I give you like bus ticket, do you know where to go? I was like, yeah, I know where to go. He put me on a bus to my father's place. And I knew cause I lived there for 9 months. So I know where my father lives. So do you think it's a coincidence or it's a miracle?
I mean, you certainly got some good fortune having that guy pass by and care enough to stop and help you.
Yeah, and then like I knock on my father's door and then he just like freaking out. Like to be honest, like 16-year-old kid, you know, like crossing like the world, like heavily fortified and most closed up country, escaping that country by himself. It's like impossible.
Sure.
You know, like, and then he thought I was a criminal. Like, did you kill someone? Like, are you on the run? You know, that's why did you escape? I'm like, no. Like
no, that place sucks. Remember, yeah, you used to live there.
Just live there, you know? Yeah, and like, cause I was working in a coal mine, you know, I explained it, you know, and like, I was just hungry and I just wanted to live my life in freedom, you know? And then he was like, okay, well, that makes sense. And then I escaped in 2011 August, but 2011 October, Kim Jong-il died. The security has been gone like tripled.
Oh, they made the security even tighter.
Yeah. So like some like North Korean like military came to China to look for North Koreans, so capture them and deport back to North Korea, right?
Wow.
So I couldn't move. Like I was always staying at home, you know, like I was so scared. And then finally my dad was like, okay, you know what? If you stay here and if you get caught, you know, you're going to go to labor camp. And this time you're going to be 18, so no more. You're going to go to 4 years labor camp, you know, no mercy for you. And then he found a broker that smuggles people out of China to South Korea. So I embarked on another long journey to Southeast Asia. And I was on a bus to travel to Southeast Asia. And I know how dangerous that journey is. Because I've seen a lady biting off her vein, killing herself because she got caught nearby Mongolia. And every single time the bus stops, like my heart pounding in my throat, you know, and like my palms are like sweaty and it's like full of like sweat, you know, cause like if I get caught here, I'm gonna die. And like if the bus stops, like every single one, like every single hair on my body is sticking up, you know, cause I'm so scared. But fortunately, I didn't get caught, you know.
Oh, man.
Are you alone at this point?
So I wasn't alone. There was like a couple of the North Koreans who's escaping with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a broker.
He's with you?
I don't know who he is. You know who I am, but I don't know who you are. In case we get caught, we don't tell on you. You know, we don't know who.
But he's on the bus?
He's on the bus,
but
too.
But you have no idea who
he is? I have no
is.
Idea who it is, they but you know me.
The person who arranged this told you he's going to be on the bus.
Yeah, he's going to be on the bus.
But you won't know who he is.
I don't know who it is.
There are two or three of you guys.
Yeah, three of us. And then about a week, I finally met. So we are on a bus. We are on a like motorcycle. We are in a van, you know. And then we are escaping through Southeast Asia, you know. And I got to Southeast Asia. I got to Thailand. And then we were on a boat. Like a really small boat, like a really narrow
boat.
A boat, yeah. It's like a big tree, you know. Cut it in half.
Like you're like
on tune
canoe.
Canoe.
Oh, yeah,
canoe.
God. Okay.
Yeah, we had a back there. We had a mortar, right? And it's a canoe.
I know what you're. Yeah, like in Thailand, these little Thai boats that are hollowed out logs.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you were in that thing? That's so scary. Dude.
I know, right? I couldn't move, and I heard a story about like crocodiles in the river. You know?
I don't know about that.
Mekong River?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you even gave a crap about crocodiles at that point.
After this river, like, I'm free. I'm completely free, you know? And, like, I'm holding down on it, and I'm looking at the light towards the Thailand. And, like, and if I move a little bit, we're gonna flip, you know? Like, I was like, oh my God. You know? And then we got to Thailand, and then we voluntarily surrendered to Thailand police. So they're like, oh, like we're going to put you in a prison for 10 days. I'm not going to lie. That was the best day of my life.
Going to Thai prison,
right?
Wow.
Waking up in a Thai prison camp. I mean, because for me, you know, I have only a certain experience, you know, because it's for me freedom. Like I can exhale.
Right.
You know, I'm like, oh, you know, now I'm finally free.
Thailand recognizes North Korean refugees, right?
As a refugees, right. Yeah.
So you're like, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah, I know I'm in good hands, you know, and then they were sending us to South Korea, right? So what happened is like you enter Thailand without any permission, but Thailand, like they like let you go wherever they want to go because we are refugees, right? So they're kicking us out of Thailand to South Korea, right?
That's the understanding.
Yeah, that's the understanding.
So you felt better waking up in the Thai prison than you did waking up in that hotel in China.
100 times better. And plus, they fed us white rice and chicken soup and egg. Like, wait, what? Like, I ate like 50 pieces of corn every meal in North Korean prison. You know, I'm like, wait, what? This is a big step up, you know? And like, they just let me sleep like however do I want. I just wake up anytime. There's food. There's water. I don't have to do anything. And then I was trying to apply for South Korea, but they didn't recognize me as refugee because my father is Chinese.
No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they said like,
well, you're in Thailand.
I'm in Thailand.
You're applying for refugee status
to South Korea.
And they won't give it to you because you're only half
Chinese
Korean.
And half Korean. And I'm like, Chinese government doesn't recognize me as refugee and they sent me back to North Korea. I went to detention center and I've been through crap and I got sent back to North Korea, but you guys don't want to help me. And they're like, Charles, like we really want to help you, but we cannot change the law. We would have to send you back to China. I'm like, crap.
Oh my God.
I'm dead.
Wow. You just thought you were out.
I'm out. Like,
and
I'm
now
completely
there's like,
out. Like, there is no hope for me. Cause like, resettlement was the only hope for me.
Right.
Because like, I'm in Thailand.
Thailand won't let you stay.
They won't let me stay. Cause like,
China will send you back.
China will send me back.
And now South Korea won't take you.
Yeah, they won't take. So I'm an international, like, orphanage.
Right. Stateless.
Stateless. I really thought of like killing myself at there.
Did you really?
I didn't eat for like a week. You know, I became like, cutting. You know, I just drink water. I just like, I can't eat because I'm so stressed. Because I got moved to like another cell from North Korean cell to international cell to move back to China. You know, because like,
oh, they already started the process.
Yeah, they already started the process.
And like, so you are already like, this is happening.
Yeah, this is happening. I'm going to die. You know, like, and then like, every day was a struggle. You know, every day was like a war for me, you know, because like, trying to find like South Korean embassy like Asian, you know, like, shouting at them, you know, like, please help me, you know, like, but I met Jesus. I'm just kidding.
You can resist that one.
But seriously though, like one guy who like recommended me, like, hey, you should apply for UN. I think they know your situation really well. I think they might take you. And then I applied for UN, and then most of people, they have to wait a year to get a first interview, right? But for me, I got my interview within a week.
So who is this guy that told you to apply to the UN for international refugee status?
Jesus.
So, explain.
Yeah.
Who so, is this?
Qualify that
yeah.
one.
So he is another North Korean dude
okay.
who's going to United States, and he's waiting to be processed.
Where right? did you meet him?
International, the international refugee camp.
He's there too?
Yeah, he's in the same cell as me.
Okay.
Right? But all the people there are international. They're not just, but there's a cell for only North Koreans, and there is cell for like international people that they're going to America, you know, they're going to like, I know, like, Japan, you know, all over the world. Mm-hmm. Right? And he was like, oh yeah, you should, apply for America. They might be, you know, accepting. They might help you out. So I applied for UN. And then I got my first interview in the first week, second interview in the second week, third week, fourth week. I went to hospital. I got my body checked out. Everything's good. And then you're going to go to America.
Wow. How did that happen so quickly?
Because I was a minor at the time.
How did you fill out the paperwork? I don't even understand.
Yeah, like, I mean, just
there was like a Korean, you know, like a translator helped me out.
He worked at the prison?
She's working for UN.
A UN worker helped you.
Yeah,
apply.
Helped me. Yeah, apply for the.
What did that feel like? That.
Oh my god! Like the day that I got my plane ticket, I could not sleep. I was so excited, you know, like all the things that I can do, right? All the things that how I'm gonna live. Like I'm trying to map out, you know, how I'm gonna live, you know, my rest of my life, you know, like. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna live my life so good. You know, I'm gonna be really good. I'm gonna become rich. I'm gonna help out. And I'm gonna do like old things. You know, I'm gonna go to church. Like my thoughts are like full of like plans. You know, like, and at the same time, I'm so excited. You know, like I couldn't sleep for the whole day.
Until that point, you didn't plan to go to America.
I didn't know, like, I mean, I knew about America, but, like, I didn't even, like, imagine going there because, you know, it's such a foreign country. You know, it's such a foreign to me. South Korea was only, like, my like, option, you know, but even better, way better. So I didn't know about America. I mean, like, I knew about America, but, like, I didn't think of coming to America, you know? It's like...
Imagine you think you're going to die in a North Korean labor camp and you end up in Los Angeles instead.
Yeah. That, it's blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So you get on the plane. Did you fly from Thailand?
Yeah, from Thailand to South Korea. And I remember looking
at... Oh, you went from Thailand to South Korea?
South Korea.
South Korea.
To Los Angeles.
To Los Angeles.
LAX.
Did you know anybody here?
No.
What was your plan?
So IRS, so International Refugee, like... International Refugee Service. Mm-hmm. So they had people.
Much friendlier than the IRS.
I was about to say, yeah. I didn't know the IRS helped refugees get settled. A different International Refugee Service.
Yeah, I think it's IRS. I might have look that up, but it's like, what's IRS?
It's our Internal Revenue Service. They take, you'll learn all about them now that you're paying taxes.
Oh, IRS, the tax, tax collectors, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just to file a tax.
Not as helpful as the ones that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But there's another, like, a service.
Is it a nonprofit?
It's really big.
Is it?
It's really big nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like a UN.
Like an NGO.
Yeah, NGO.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really big.
They help refugees get settled in different places.
Yeah.
So they knew about your case.
Yeah, they knew about my
How
case.
How did they know? Did you write them?
Yeah, so I told them everything about, like, I told them every specific, like, I told them, so if you go to China, this jail, you'll find about my paper. You'll find everything about me. If you go to this North Korean location, you'll find everything about me. And then I guess they have connections.
Are they part of the process of getting a visa?
That was the interview, right?
That's all part of it.
All part of it. Okay. Right? To like accepting me as a refugee, right? So they have to make sure that I'm like identified. You know?
Yeah,
I'm
you're
like,
not a criminal.
Yeah, I'm not a criminal. Right. I'm not a.
You're not part of a group, a terrorist
part of,
group,
like, a terrorist
or something.
Group, yeah. Or part of like any like organization, you know.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Charles Rue. We'll be back right after this. This episode is also sponsored by Finn.com. There's just not enough hours in the day to get all my tasks done. My options were to continue trying to do things all by myself, how I've been doing them, or hire an assistant. So I was looking into getting some help and hiring an assistant, but that's when I discovered Finn. Like the best assistants, Finn knows your preferences, remembers the people you interact with, and integrates with your email and calendar. Finn can make calls, send emails on your behalf, pay bills, remember important dates, and automatically get things done for you. Currently, we're using Finn to actually do prep for the show and get background on the upcoming guests and people that we might want on the show. It's fantastic. Saves me a lot of time. Now, if you're someone who doesn't have 40 hours of work for an assistant every week, here's the best part. Finn is always available, on demand, and you only pay for what you use. Once you try Finn, you're going to love it as much as we do. And as a listener of our show, we've arranged for all of you to try Finn for free. Just use our link, finn.com/Jordan. That's finn.com/Jordan to try Finn for free. finn.com/Jordan.
This episode is sponsored in part by Varidesk. Varidesk has made traditional static offices a thing of the past. Today, companies and employees want an active workspace. You know, everybody wants to be standing up, moving around, sitting on a ball, whatever it is. And Varidesk helps people reimagine their work environment and transform their office design. I've got a standing desk. This thing is built like a tank. It boosts my energy and my productivity. I can sit or stand at it. It's not just a standing desk. It's a variable desk, hence the name Varidesk. It's an active workspace solution, as one might term it. Makes it easy to encourage more movement to your workday. Burn a couple calories. Stand up. You know, let that 2:30 slough become some sort of a productive window for you. The new ProDesk 60 electric standing desk. This is the beast that I got. I love this thing. Commercial grade materials. Stable at any height. It's not going to tip over when you put your stuff on it. You can assemble the thing in under 5 minutes. Plus, it's made to last. Like I said, you couldn't break this thing if you wanted to.
You can try Varidesk products, including the new ProDesk 60 Electric, risk-free for 30 days with free shipping and free returns if you're not satisfied. Learn more at varidesk.com/Jordan. That's varidesk.com/Jordan. Thanks for supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/advertisers. We're rebuilding this show from scratch, so a nice rating and review in iTunes or your podcast player of choice would really help us out. It only takes a minute or two, and if you want some tips on how to do that, head on over to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Now back to the show with our guest, Charles Rue.
What was your first plane ride like?
You know, I remember looking out the windows. The plane began to land in California. You know, I've never dreamed of being on a plane, like even coming to America. You know, it's like I'm so high up. You know, I was so terrified of like turbulence. You know, I'm like, when's the plane shakes, I'm like, you know, I was like, all the plane rides, but like, I got used to it because I flew for like 16 hours or something like that from Thailand to Southeast Asia, South Korea, and South Korea to here. You know, it's took like, so I got used to it, you know, and
how about that airplane food, huh? Are you like, I'm going back to the coal mine?
Yeah, it's like, this is terrible. Like, healthy food? Like, what is this?
You're like, give me that Thai prison food.
Yeah, where's that Thai prison food?
Oh, like the vegetables and like a brown rice. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what?
You're not even in America
yet. I left
North
Korea because I hate this food. And like, give me this.
Yeah.
Give me some good stuff, you know. Like an oily, you know, like a dripping oil.
That's right.
Like
the In-N-Out we had for lunch.
You know, like,
Panda Express.
Like, you know, like dripping with like oils, you know, like dripping with like fat, you know.
Oh, I know.
And then, I didn't even like imagine being on a plane or even coming to America, you know, and like, as I step off the plane, I felt these strange feelings that I've never known before, you know, it's safety. Like, I was finally safe and didn't need to hide anymore.
What does safety feel like? Like, if you could describe it, how would you describe it?
Like, feelings are relaxed, you know, like every single part of your body muscles, you know, it's like relaxed, you know, and like, you can breathe, you know, like, you can breathe the air. You know, I used to breathe fear. You know, I used to breathe like fear in China. Because every single breath that I'm taking, it's a fear. Because I'm afraid of like getting caught. And afraid of being, you know, bitten. You know, afraid of being taken away. You know. But finally, like, breathing air, like a normal air, right? And I could feel that. I could feel like a safety in the air. You know what I mean? Like I don't need to hide anymore. You know, I don't need to be afraid of like government anymore. I don't need to be afraid of something. You know, I don't need to fear anything because I'm protected.
What was the first, I mean, immigrating from another country is hard, but you're basically immigrating to the 21st century from North Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like time warp.
Yeah, right. For me, it was like, yeah, getting into like time machine, you know, like, cause like a lot of North Koreans say this, you know, getting into like time machine, you know, fast forwarding like 50 years, 70 years, you know, where it's like there's technology, there is like phone, there is computer, there is touch screen, there is a drone, you know, there's like camera and everything. Like, and it's really unique experience. Like it's just mind blowing. You know, it's just mind blowing experience to have all those kind of like technology in my hand, you know, and I don't know what to do with it. You know, like, is this like eating thing? Is it food? Is this like a something that you wear? You know, is this something that like you do something with it? You know, I don't know what I'm doing with it. But the most thing that I did, like, I had a first smartphone in 2012. As soon as I got here, I got my smartphone, Samsung Galaxy S2, I think. And then I remember looking through that phone, you know, it's so like, it's a small TV, you know, it's a small television.
And it has more than one channel.
Yeah, more than one channel. It's like a 24 hour, you know, like it has a YouTube, you know. And yeah, in North Korea, we only have like a one channel, which is like educational broadcasting, you know, like a brainwashed propaganda, you know. But like more than one channel, like I was so distracted, like watching, like I'm like a kid, you know, I'm like 5 years old kid.
Watching
know,
every always. Will Smith clip.
Yeah, yeah. Watching Will Smith clips, you know, and like watching all those Family Guy, you know, watching the Rick and Morty, like Rick and Morty, I was like, but Family Guy, American Dad.
That's my wife's favorite.
American Dad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you, what, like... I know you had seen movies,
yeah.
But I'm sure a lot of that was new.
Yeah.
Was that, did you understand it?
I didn't understand anything, but I just like the main characters, right? Characters, like how they act, you know, and I didn't understand like anything like 2 years later, you know, and then like I could speak, you know, and then.
Oh, yeah, because you didn't speak English at that point.
I didn't speak any, like only thing that I could say was like, thank you. And like 2 years later, like my ear was like opening. Like, I can understand you, you know, like, it's a magical moment. And then, like, somehow, like, I'm not afraid to, like, speak anymore. Cause, like, I was always shy, you know, like, if I try to speak something, like, my face turned red, you know, I couldn't, like, say anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I understand, like, better, you know? And, like, movies, like, became, like, my friend, you know, because, like, I understand. And then, like, it's, somehow I turned it into, like, what do you call the people with like just communicating with like a device, like just only on the computer, like keyboard heroes? Like what is?
I don't know. Keyboard jockey? I don't know.
Geek?
He just only, you're only communicating online?
No, I mean like I'm just watching, you know, TV all day, you know.
Oh yeah, couch potato.
Couch potato. But yeah, I was in high school, so I was like every like after school I've done homework and just like sitting on a TV, you know, all day. I think that's how I learned English.
So you went to high school?
I went to high school. So, you know, funny thing is, so I arrived in September 21st, 2012, and I went to high school the right next day.
The next day?
Right, wow. Next day. Yeah.
Wow. Wait, you landed in LA though, right?
No, I landed in LA and then I was on like JetBlue or something. And then I went to SJC, San Jose Airport.
You went to Northern California.
Yeah. So I resettled in NorCal. Yeah. Mm. NorCal. Yeah.
They just put you in high school. Like he'll be fine. He doesn't speak English. He's been homeless working in a coal mine.
Yeah. I dodged the bullet, you know, and
just escaped twice from the most repressive regime.
Yeah,
wait, so you drop it. How old are you at this point?
I was 17 and like American age, I was like 17 and 11 months old.
So almost 18.
Almost 18, yeah.
And then you went to an American high school.
Yeah.
The day after you landed.
Yeah.
You don't speak English.
I don't speak any English.
What is that like?
It was chaos. I don't know anything. Like, I'm like, I gotta survive this. This is another whole different level of like stress I need to deal with.
A whole nother level? What are you talking about? You come from a labor camp and chemistry class is freaking you out?
I don't understand anything. Like, I have to get this. Like, I need to understand, you know, I need to write down everything what they're saying, but I don't know anything. Like,
oh my God.
I mean, can you even write in English?
No.
Did anyone know that at the school?
No. I mean, like,
so how did you?
I mean, they knew that I couldn't speak any English. They knew that I couldn't write anything, but like, they put me in an ESL class, right? But I'm going to school with like freshman kids. I was almost 18. There's a 14-year-old kid just sitting right next to me talking something about something. I don't understand anything. I'm like, yeah. I don't understand anything.
Well, does anybody know that you came from North Korea?
They didn't know. Only principal and a couple of teachers knew that I was from North Korea, but they helped me a lot. Like, they keep like helping me, you know, helping with math, you know, they're helping with English. But it was really tough. It was really, really tough. It was even tougher than, like, I guess in a certain extent, I was tougher than working in a coal mine. Because, like, I don't
American
understand.
High school is tougher than working in a North Korean coal mine.
Yeah, because I don't understand.
There's a quote for the episode.
In a way, I can understand that because you don't speak the language.
Yeah, I don't speak the same language. I don't know the culture. You know, I don't know, like, because I'm a elementary dropout in North Korea.
Yeah.
I didn't go to school at all.
And even if you did, you'd know about like Kim Jong-il and not a whole lot more.
I don't know anything about history, you know, but I learned that America dropped a bomb on Hiroshima in Japan, and that's how they surrendered. But how I learned in North Korea is that Kim Il-sung fought the head-to-toe armed Japanese soldier, Japanese like crap ton of like army, and Kim Il-sung came in and he beat the crap out of them and just like kicked them out from North Korea, and they freed us from like Japanese, right?
They taught you that Kim Il-sung was responsible for ending World War II?
Yes.
Not just the Korean War, but...
Not just Korean War, but winning the Japanese, you know, the right. Kicking the Japanese out of like North Korea.
Are there other historical, like, are there other versions of history that you remember learning about in the States that you were just like, oh my God, what I was told was completely wrong? Do you remember any of those moments?
Like, for example, like Kim Jong-il, you know, Kim Il-sung fighting Japanese, right? Like kicking them off from North Korea. That's how he fought. You know, it's a fought off Japanese, right? Head to toe armed. Kim Il-sung winning the war. Korean War,
yeah.
It's ceasefire. It's never ended, you know? And I think Kim Il-sung like kind of lost the war, you know, but he doesn't tell us he lost. He prevented America invading North Korea. That's the two things, like the major historical.
Those are the two big moments.
Yeah,
and they both have to do with Kim Il-sung.
Yeah, have to do with Kim Il-sung, right? So I'm like, what?
What surprised you most about Americans after you thought we were all werewolves and evil, and then you end up in like San Jose High School?
They're kind. They're so kind. Like caring, you know, because like they all helped me. You know, my social worker was like white lady. She was in like late 20s, you know. And then she would always be kind to me, you know. And I was so surprised, you know, like she was like really nice to me. You know, I thought I would expect like they being like so like stubborn, you know, they being like so like violence, you know, but like they're so kind, you know. Yeah.
We never talked about that kid who stole your shoes.
Right. Yeah, right. So going back to that point, so I met, that's not a kid actually, he's like in his like mid 30s,
oh, okay.
Right? At the time. And he stole my shoes in the detention center, and I don't know what happened from then, right? Cause he stole my shoes and then he went off. I was working in a, detention center for a while. And then I met him in Thailand, the prison camp.
Did he have your stinking shoes? Hey, where are my shoes at, man?
No, it's been like 2 years later. So he doesn't have, he has like a better shoes, right?
You should have stolen his shoes.
Right. I know. I was going to do that. And then I was a new recruit, right? So right after the next day I arrived in Thailand, they put me in a truck and they drove me to a local, like a prison camp, right? And then I was like, we're all like, you know, searched up, you know, make sure we don't have any drugs or anything else. And then we're all searched up, and then we went into like with handcuffs, right? And then we went into the prison cell And that when we entered the prison cell, they uncuffed us. But I see this dude is looking so familiar, but he's not Korean. He's speaking Korean, right? He looks so familiar. I was like, I think I've seen you somewhere. And then, oh my God, it's the dude, but he doesn't remember me. I was like, I saw you at the Chongjin, like, the detention center, and you took my shoes, and now he remembers it. I was like, oh my God, thank you so much for your shoes. Because of the shoes, I could escape. And then he's telling me this story, right? So he stole my shoes, and then he was on a train with these two police officers who's like, transporting him. And then he tells me that also, like, when I was in interrogation, like, in an office, I swallowed a paperclip, and then he went to the bathroom like a couple days later and he pooped it out, and then he kept the paperclip, right? And then, like, he kept it in under the tongue while he was like transporting it, and then he took it out and he unhandcuffed.
He picked the handcuffs.
Yeah, he picked the handcuffs, and then he's running through between the trains, but the train was moving, right? So all the doors are closed, and then all the windows were closed too, right? So as soon as, like, he got away, like, maybe, like, a couple of, like, feet, and then the guards realized he's gone, and then he's chasing him, right? He's, like, chasing him, and he's seeing all those windows, like, closed, and the doors closed, too, but he sees one window that are, like, open, and then he's running through that window, and then he's just, like, whoosh! You know?
Dove out the window.
Yeah, he dove out the window. I don't know how fast the train is going, and I don't, like, he's explaining how the train was going pretty slow.
Wow.
And then he just dive out of the train, and he rolls in like in a rocky. Yeah. And then he walk for a couple of like days, and then he get back to China, and then he working in China for a while. He saved enough money. He bought a broker, and then he's on a journey to South Korea. And then that's how he met me. And then he took, cause like he was really old and he has some money. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anything in Thailand. So like he was with me about like a month and a half. I was staying Thailand for like 8 months, but he was with me for the first month and a half. Within that month and a half, he paid for everything. Like he bought me food, he bought me snack, he bought me cigarette, he bought me like everything, you know, cause like he's like, yeah, because of your shoes. And like, it's like a meeting, like a hometown person, you know, mm-hmm. It feels really good because you know that person from North Korea, right? And then like meeting him, like it's like, what?
Yeah, how random. That is such a weird coincidence.
Right? It's like, the world's so small. Yeah.
Life is so crazy.
It is so crazy.
That's so wild.
Yeah, do you still keep in touch with him?
No, actually, I lost contact with him when he got to South Korea. Mm. He gave me, like, phone number to call, but, like, he doesn't pick it up. So I must think he changed his number or something. Yeah.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, I do remember his name.
You want to just say it? Maybe he'll email us?
Maybe not. Maybe not, yeah.
Got it.
Maybe not. It's his family to protect. So.
Sure, yeah. I understand. How long have you been in America?
It's been 6 years now.
And I assume, do you think you'll stay here?
For the rest of my life? Yeah, I got my citizenship, right? So I'm just going to be here. Yeah.
This might be a weird question, but is there anything about North Korea that you miss?
I do. Actually, I do have, like, I have a lot of things that I miss about North Korea. Like, North Korea, it's a clean land, you know? It's not exposed by mankind, like humankind, you know? So it's very, very, like, original, right? It's like, it's not developed,
pristine.
You know?
Pristine.
Yeah, clean, you know? The nature is beautiful, you know, the water, you know, the air is fresh. And, of course, my friends. Like, during summer, you know, during hot day, you know, I go out to, like, a river, you know, like, I smell grass, you know, and, like, smelling the river, just swimming in there, you know, the water's, like, delicious, even the, like, river, the water's delicious. And, you know, like, a lot of people think that, like, North Korean people are brainwashed, trying to kill everyone, trying to kill America, trying to, trying to like have war with Americans, you know, but actually that's not true, you know. I mean, like a lot of young millennials, you know, like us, you know, they know about, you know, America. They know about South Korea. They know about capitalism, you know. So it's not like that. You know, it's not like, and I know that a lot of people think that North Korean people are starving to death, like most of them, but that's actually not true either. Some rich, like North Korean high government officials, they live like better than like middle class American does. You know, they have a lot of money. They're so rich. People who have connections with like governments, you know, they are rich. They can do whatever they want. They can kill someone and they can buy their way out.
What did you tell me earlier at Starbucks about people who are fat and bald?
Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry. You know, like, no offense, but people who are coming from North Korea, right? When I came here, like, culture shock was like, people who are rich, they're skinny. People who are poor, they're fat. Like, I mean, I didn't understand, like, how is that possible? You know? Like people who's rich, shouldn't you be fat? And like people who's poor, shouldn't you be skinny because you cannot eat really well? And you know, in North Korea, if fat people, if you go to,
it's the opposite.
No offense, but if you go to North Korea, you're gonna be just famous as Kim Jong-un, you know?
Because I'm so fat.
Yeah, because you're so fat, you're bold, you know, and North Korean people.
I'm not bald, though.
Yeah, you're not bold.
Yeah, that's so weird. Like in America, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah, it's the opposite, right? But North Korean people, like if you go to North Korea, right? And people are starving, right? So they don't have big tummy. And people who is bald, like that indicates like you're educated, right? And you have like high class.
I learned so much, all my hair fell out.
Yeah, so North Korean people, like they think that if you have a big like belly and like a bald head, they think you're working for government, right? You're a government official. So like you get like free bows.
People have to bow to you.
Free bows?
Yeah.
If you're bald?
Yeah, if you're bald. Interesting. Cuz like they like think that he's a government official, right? Government, like he's working for the government, right? So he comes to you and he just,
they have to bow to you.
Yeah.
Are there other things about life in America that you're still adjusting to or that don't make sense?
I mean, like, I'm still adjusting to, like, a racism, you know?
Adjusting to racism?
Yeah, like, you know, like, I didn't know about the racism at all, you know? I just thought there's only yellow, you know, but there's...
You didn't know there were other...
Yeah, I didn't know there was other colors, you know, like a white, yellow, like, black, you know? But I'm still learning that, and I'm still adjusting it, you know? And I'm still, like, it's not the culture... It's about like 257 other cultures that are, you know, all together, right? And I'm still learning about the capitalism, you know, and like I learned that like capitalism is not friendly, you know, it's not friendly, you know, people always trying to make money off of you, you know, people trying to like take advantage of you, you know, if you don't speak any language, if you're not smart, they're trying to take advantage of you. You know, that happened like so many times to me.
Oh, how does that show up? Like, when does that happen to you?
So, when I was in school, you know, I really wanted to get a car, you know, mm-hmm. I really wanted to get a car. So, I had $2,000 in my hand. I worked my butt off to make the money. And then I walked into a car dealership. I have $2,000. What kind of car can I get? This guy comes out with an Audi car key, right? Okay, yeah, drive it. Test it. I don't even have a driver's license. I have a permit, right?
Oh, you have a learner's permit?
Okay. Yeah, right? And then I had a permit. And then I handed it to him and like, oh yeah, sure. There you go. Test drive the car. So nice, you know, the girl's like, crazy fast. And I'm like, I'll take it. How much is it? And he's like, don't worry about it. Just give me your money and we'll just get you the car, okay? And then, yeah, sure. And then this guy's like, used my credit, right? Credit to like, apply for the credit, like mm-hmm. a loan from the bank. So they sold me as like $1,300,000.
Wait, $13,000?
Sorry, $13,000.
Yeah.
And then this car, it was... It was overheated once. This car engine is almost dying.
Wait, so they sold you the car?
They sold me the car.
For only $2,000 down or something?
Yeah, only $2,000 down. So I have $11,000
to go. Okay.
Right?
That guy should be... That's like ridiculous.
Insane.
That's unbelievable.
Right? Okay. And then I bought the car. And from that day, the engine oil is leaking. Right? Engine oil is leaking. And it gives me a problem every single day for the next, 6 months. And I drove 9,000 miles. And then the car blew off.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Sold you a lemon.
Yeah, sold a lemon car, right? And I still have like $11,000 to go on a bank. And then the car completely blew off.
Yeah, that sucks.
So I went to the dealership and hey, look, what's happening? And he's like, yeah, you signed the paper. You have everything. Like, I can't do anything for you because this, you signed it and apparently you bought the car as it is. We can't do anything for you.
Yeah.
I'm screwed. And then I'm like, I have to have a car because, I wanted to drive Lyft, and I wanted to, I have to go to work. I have to go to school at the same time. So I went to, okay, so I'm not going to go to, small dealership. I'm going to go to big dealership. And also, they will give me a good car. Mm-hmm. And then I had another $3,000 in my hand. So I wanted to buy a used car in the big dealership, right? I walk into the door in a Honda dealership in Concord. This guy's... Okay, he's he have a big smile on his face, he's super friendly. And then he's like, are you buying any cars? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for a car, to buy here. And he's like, yeah, come on in, he's like, bend over in the table. He's come on in, you're welcome. You're always welcome, I'm looking for a person like you to, screw over, And then he sold me a car, Honda Civic, 2015 Honda Civic. So I had the $8,000 on the Audi A4. And then this guy sold me that car at $21,000 in a maximum interest. So you could have purchased as a $14,000. Yeah, $14,000, but this guy's like, oh yeah, this is a kid, he doesn't know anything. So let me fuck you over, mm-hmm. He's like... So plus the $8,000, $21,000 plus tax, plus $8,000. So I got almost $29,000 for a Honda Civic, 2015 Honda Civic.
Wow.
And then I had to pay a lot of, so I learned really big mistake. I made made a lot of big mistakes, and I had to learn that this is not something that, friendly, mm-hmm. and you had to...
That must be hard.
It was really hard. It was really, really hard.
After everything you've been through.
Yeah.
Then you get screwed over by two used car salesmen.
The worst kind of humans. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. I have to, really, really learn, learn from mistakes. And then, And, capitalism is really not friendly. One thing that, I learned in this society, it's why people doesn't have empathy,
why people why do people not have empathy?
Yeah, empathy for each other, mm-hmm. If you're rich, they don't care. If you're rich, I don't care about you. Why should I care about you,
Do you think there was more empathy in North Korea?
I guess within my friends, fellow friends, and even though if we're starving, we're starving all together, right? And if we're struggling, we're struggling all together. We're in a one boat, but in here, everyone is different levels of so it's really hard.
And most people here, I imagine, can't begin to understand what you've been through uniquely.
Yeah. I believe that this is land of opportunity, right? There is still hope. There is a lot of good things about, all the things. So if I work hard, work smart, I think I can achieve my dreams, whatever I have. And, everything that I do it with hope, excitement, I've been through a lot. So what? I don't live in the past. I live in present, So, today, let's make it today the best, why not? So it's yesterday happened. What can I do? Learn from it. Don't do it again, and just look forward, keep going, just keep just walking, and it'll be fine.
Do you think you had to learn how to become that way? or are you just that way by
nature? I'm just that way. Yeah.
You're just that way.
My personality is like just that way.
Yeah. If you weren't that way, it would have been harder.
It would have been harder. Like I wouldn't know like which place I would end up today if I wasn't like that. You know, like I can't imagine. You know, I would probably working in a coal mine. I'll probably dead by now.
I want to end on something a little lighter, you know? First of all, well, maybe this isn't later, but how come when we went to North Korea, people on the subway and things like that, they move away from us? Nobody will talk to us. People won't look at us. Some people will look at us like out of the corner of their eye, but there was very little interaction aside from hotel staff and things like that.
Yeah, like I'm not sure about that because like I've never told, you know, there is like American people visiting North Korea, you know. The only thing that I've learned and only thing that I've heard was like foreign country people coming to North Korea to praise Kim Jong-il, you know, because his like leadership is so great, you know, so they come to perform in his birthday party, you know, like Kim Il-sung's birthday party, you know, and I'm not sure why is that, like, and I never knew about that either. Like when I was in North Korea, I've never heard about like people visiting, you know, people all over the country, like paying like $2,500 every week just to stay like.
Jordan, I actually had a question for you about that. So he and I have been to North Korea several times. The first time we went purely out of curiosity. And then we both ended up kind of getting hired to lead tourists there. But I think we kept going because we wanted to understand North Korea better because it's really hard to understand it if you just watch the news, and we were just curious and, you know, wanted to travel. And Jordan and I have talked about this a bunch over the years. Those trips opened our eyes to a very different way of life. And I think we both feel very lucky to have seen another part of the world and get to know people from a country we wouldn't get to meet. But there are a lot of people who, when we talk about it, when they find out that we've been there, don't think it's okay that we went to North Korea. And I kind of I can appreciate that perspective because they think that if you go to North Korea, you have to pay to be there. You're supporting the government that does a lot of terrible things. And it always comes down to, is the cost of tourism worth the learning opportunity? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
From your perspective, do you think tourism to North Korea is a positive or a negative?
In a way, I see that this is like tourism to North Korea is I have pros and cons, right? Because like you get to see like the beauty of North Korea, right? Beauty of like at least like air and water, right? But everything, the pro is like you see a North Korea, right? A developed North Korea, you know, cause like, everything that you see within that range is what they want you to see.
Sure.
Right? Because, like, everything that, even though you talk to, like, people on the street, you know, they were educated. They were, like, brainwashed. And they have things that they have to say to you, right? And even though they say, like, oh, like, we need help. Do you speak Korean? You don't. You have a translator between you and the guy, right? You and the pedestrian. So whatever you talk to them, whatever they talk to you, it's been translated by the government, right? So you don't get to know the true North Korea by just going through North Korea with government,
right?
Because like you're only limited to like the resources and limited to like things that you are seeing,
sure,
right? But if you want to make it, you want to going to North Korea through the border. I mean, like, through the way that I came out, like, if you want to go there. Like,
I'm going to pass on that. I'm going to settle for this particular conversation in lieu of sneaking into North Korea.
I mean, you're right. You don't get to see the real North Korea because you don't get to see all of it.
Yeah, all of it,
but
right?
I guess my question is it still worth it for people to go?
It's not worth it.
You don't think it's worth
it? It's not worth it. Okay. It's, you know, but I don't think it's really worth it because you're just supporting North Korean government, you know, because that money is going into building a nuclear weapon, building the bullets, you know, making the bullets that are going to kill North Korean people, you know, so it's not really worth
it. So to you, even though the dollar amount is low, very low, I mean, it's almost nothing, to you, it's still contributing
to North Korea
to something really terrible.
Yeah, something really terrible. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, so I don't think it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Instead of you going into North Korea, right, to see what's happening, how about you spend that money to find North Korean refugees that are here, right? Listen to their stories, find organizations that who supports people, supports North Korean refugees that are trying to escape from China to South Korea. How about you help them? How about you read their stories, right? And then how about you just help them getting out of North Korea, right? Getting out of China. I think that's something that way much more worth than going into North Korea. And I personally believe that working with North Korean refugees to, you know, changing North Korea, I think it's way worth it, because North Korean, like, refugees plays really, really big role on this huge issues, right? Because people who comes out from North Korea, they have still have connection back in North Korea. They sending like tremendous money back into North Korea. Like per year, $15 million are going into North Korea, right? That money is not going into any government. That money is not going into any part of like nuclear weapons. That money is truly going into like North Korea. You know, that money are used by people, right? And they're making like markets better, right? And helping that refugee, getting to know them a little bit better, right? Getting to know them and helping them. I think that's the way that we can truly get to see North Korea, you know, because unification, when unification happened, I'll take you there. Don't worry. I'll take you there, you know, and I believe that, I personally believe that North Korea and South Korea will be unified in my lifetime.
Reunified.
Reunified.
You think it's going to happen?
Yeah.
Well, we might take you up on that if you're going to go back. I would go back.
Yeah.
But only
I'll take you to my hometown and, you know, I'll just, but let's not go, you know, until Kim's regime crumbles.
I'm not going until that happens.
No. I think we've decided for sure.
I think we have made that very dangerous for ourselves. How do people date in North Korea? Like, how do you meet women and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, dating is free, you know? Like, it's not like government's like, dating is like really free in North Korea. Cause,
just go to a chestnut farm, man.
It's all about
the chestnut farm, you know?
I remember I asked one of our tour guides where she meets guys, and she looked at me like I was dumb as hell. And she goes, at the library. Why? Where do you meet people? Like, library.
One of our other guides said that he meets people on the intranet. Do you remember that?
Yeah. On the, like, when he's playing Counter-Strike.
He's playing like some very low res version of.
Yeah.
Some game.
And he said
something.
He chats with girls online.
I don't know about that. I mean,
just lying.
I mean, like, there is like an intranet as a micronet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Intranet, existing in North Korea, right? But I don't think that guy's just BSing, you know, like,
you can't chat with other people on that.
Like, within the college, you know, they're allowed to use the internet to, like, you know, within like schools, like certain like areas. But yeah, I don't think.
He was a little bit nutty.
He was a little
totally
crazy.
Possible. But anyway, but go back to dating. Tell us, how does that work?
Yeah, dating is like, it's normal. It's like, just like here, you know, like, oh, if you like me, buy me something, you know. But that's guys are playing that role. You know, girls doesn't get to play that
role. So what's a date? What does a date look like in North Korea?
They look like you just walk, you know, because like there's a lot of like really fun things to do in North Korea too. You know, there's actually a park in North Korea.
Sounds like a freaking blast.
Yeah.
do you mean like a park like with benches and trees?
Yeah, benches and trees.
Keep selling it.
Yeah.
There's also like, was there like a fun, what do you call it, fun fair? Like an amusement park?
Amusement park, yeah. There is like amusement park that you can go to, mm-hmm. but it's really expensive and poor people can't afford it, but rich people can afford it. So they just go to there and just hang out. It's a lot similar to here, you know, because like North Korean millennials, they've been watching so much South Korean dramas and so much foreign media, so like their mentality is changing.
Oh,
you know,
what level? Can you explain what that means? Like they watch a drama.
Yeah, South Korean.
And then
drama.
How does that affect the way they date?
Because like past like 20 years or so, a lot of like there's like North Korean like millennials, right, who grew up after the famine happened.
The famine.
Right. Mm-hmm. After that happened, like there's a lot of like foreign media's going into North Korea. Right. Cause like South Korean dramas and people like at first they didn't believe, right? Oh, this is just a setup. You know, this is like they're trying to brainwash us. But like as they keep watching it, right? And like, wait, it's just a normal life. you know, the love story, you know, and there is like, they don't just see the people that are in the movie, right? They don't just see the main actors. We see people that are in background too. Mm-hmm. We watch a lot of backgrounds too. Right. And like, that's not setting.
Right. So you're not just looking at the people who are talking. You're looking and you're like, wow, there's a lot of cars.
Yeah, there are a lot of cars. There's a lot of buildings. Yeah, right. There's a lot of like fancy things. There's fancy tree, fancy road. And they kind of trying to copy that. You know, there's a lot of trendy things that are in North Korea by like South Korean dramas too. You know?
But who's they're copying
like a fashion.
Okay. Like the way people dress.
Dresses, you know, way people talk. You know, that's they how copy it. And like, within like among the friends, like we try to like copy, imitate like the South Korean accents, you know, like, hey, you know, like, ah, 잘 지냈어? 어, 뭐 잘 지냈어? You know, like, oh, 너 오늘 뭐해? 어? Like, yeah, something like that. You know, like, what you doing? You know, like, how are you doing? You know?
I think that's Korean for what's up?
Yeah.
What's up? Yeah.
It's more like that. You copy the slang and the style.
Yeah, the styles and like the way they date, you know, cause like there's a.
What does that mean?
Like South Korean dramas, it's all about love stories, mm-hmm. right? Like the rich guy meets like a poor like girl, you know, how to like hook up, you know, like. Yeah, I think like that's.
So do you think does it make young people in North Korea more ambitious or more aggressive, like more willing to talk to people or. They want to have their own love stories. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So they're like social media is changing North Korea's like perspectives, right? Lower like people's mind like slowly, you know, changing in a way that like to like capitalism, you know, like to like have like their own stories, you know, they can write their own stories like besides like what government tells you to write, mm-hmm. right?
It sounds like that's the main difference in the new generation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of things going on. Like now you have like cell phones too in North Korea. So I'm like, what? Like there's like North Korean like average person's like income is $1,500 per year. $1,500 per year.
US dollars?
Yeah, US dollars, right? Sorry. Yes, like US $1,500 per year. But the cell phone, just the per cell phone is like $700. US dollars.
Wow. So half.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like how can you afford that?
Right.
Like, who's afraid?
Right.
So, Charles, as we wrap here, we've gone like 3 episodes long or something like that. But people want to know what you're doing now. I found it surprising to hear that you had a job in IT. I thought that was kind of unusual.
Yeah, yeah. So I went to a coding bootcamp called Coding Dojo in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And I learned to code, and I learned to build a website with like website using like many different languages, like such as like Python, like JavaScript, you know, MinStack, you know, and now I'm looking for a job as a software developer. But I mean, at the side, like I'm doing like a advocacy intern at a Liberty North Korea NGO. After that, you know, I'm really, really looking forward to like have all my business, you know, in a coding school, you know, where I teach like North Korean people how to code, you know, and like teaching them like American cultures, American language, and plus like American, you know, job, you know, well-paying job.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's my ultimate dream. But for now, I really wish to find a job as a software developer.
Can you imagine coming from a place where you're working in a coal mine that doesn't even have automated diesel steam car, whatever carts, and then you're like, oh yeah, we need you to code something up for iOS real quick, yeah.
Right?
Test out some Pythons, yeah. Get this thing up and running.
I want you to build the website. I want you to build that AI that can communicate with people. I'm like, oh okay,
yeah,
sure thing. I got you. You know,
your tech at home was a TV with one channel, and now you're coding.
Yeah, now I'm like coding for food. You know,
coding for food. We'll code for food.
Yeah, I'll code for food,
especially in an app writer.
You've shared a lot of amazing things today, and I just want to say again, thank you so much for talking to us, because I mean, you just said it beautifully a moment ago, like the stories have to come out. It's really special to sit down with somebody who's been through something so extraordinary with so much like grace and patience and faith, and like, I don't know, just you have like a really incredible story, and I feel really lucky to hear it. My question is, What is it like to talk about it? Is it hard? Is it helpful? What does it feel like when you explain to people what you've been through?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I kind of the mentality of, I mean, like, I used to didn't like to talk about my story. You know, if people ask like where I'm from, I'm just telling them I'm from South Korea. You know, cause I was like, when I got here, like, I didn't really like to talk about my story. Cause in a way that kind of like brought the fear of my, you know, like past, you know, and, I really didn't like talk about it, but like I talked to like my counselor, you know, I had a PTS, you know, so I used to talk to her, you know, and then
post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
PTSD, you're saying?
Yeah. So they take a D because not a disorder. It's okay. Something that
you just have.
Yeah. Have to even. Yeah. So like talking to her, I realized like, you know, I have this fear. I'm going to live with this fear for a while. You know, I can't get rid of it because this is something that I've been through and it's feeling, you know, and the harder that I try to imprison my feeling, the harder it bounced back. You know, so why don't I use my story to inspire someone? And why don't I tell my story to raise awareness? You know, why don't I tell my story to other people so that people can know like what North Korean people went through and who's going through right now? Because my story is not unique. You know, there's a lot of people have the same story, right? And because of like that kind of mentality, I feel accomplished. You know, like every time I talk about my story, I don't talk about my story to like I don't want you to feel sorry for me. I want you to learn something about it. You know, and I don't want you to be. I don't tell my story to, you know, like, oh, Charles, you know, I feel really sad for you. You know, I feel really bad for you. I don't want that. You know, like as long as you learn something today, I'll be appreciated. You know, if you can use my story to you, cause like I was just 15, you know, I didn't know, but I've did it, you know, and inspiring someone, like, look, I did it, you know, even that situation, you know, you are now in a better, much, much more better situation, you know, you can do it too. You know, I want to motivate someone, you know, I want to inspire someone and I want to educate someone, you know, so I feel very, very accomplished.
Gives it meaning, right?
Yeah, it gives a meaning. Yeah, a lot of meaning. Yeah, a lot of meanings.
Just in case you thought we were joking about him loving Will Smith, are you comfortable sharing your Instagram handle? You might get some new followers.
Oh yeah, yeah, I would love to. It's called Fresh Prince of Pyongyang. Yeah, yeah. Please do. So I'm trying to raise awareness, right? So I just want to show people that North Korean people are normal. You know, just weird. As all of you, you know, and just normal as all of you, you know. So, yeah, that's why I am, you know, trying to have some followers, you know, and I'm trying to like put on a show, like daily life of North Korean, you know, and like, I keep trying to do that right now. But, yeah, so that's my goal, you know, to educate people that are North Korean people are normal.
Fresh Prince of Pyongyang.
Yeah.
Best Instagram handle ever.
Yeah, absolutely the best. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing all this with us, man.
No problem.
You've got stories for days. Even in the car, you're talking about how you got stabbed in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of stuff. How did we not get to that?
Yeah. So,
bonus story.
Bonus story?
Charles gets stabbed in the butt.
Maybe next time? Maybe now?
You want to just drop it now.
Yeah, let me just drop it now. So that's after I got released from the labor camp, right?
So, and that, so there's street crime in North Korea.
Yeah,
lots of
there's a lot of street crimes, right? And like, there's a lot of bully kids, you know. There's a lot of like thugs, you know. There's a lot of gangsters, you know. Bullies and gangsters, like trying to take your things away. And then one time, like we're fighting in a group, right? Because like, I want to defend my spot. You know, I want to defend like my spot for like begging food, like sleeping, you know, like I want to defend my spot. But there's like other groups who came in and trying to kick us out, right? So we had like huge fight. And then like, I don't know, cause like we are fighting in like groups, right? And I don't know who I'm hitting, but I'm just hitting somebody like, you know? And then I feel something really, really stink in my butt. So I looked at it. And small knife, like a pencil cutting knife, right? It's stuck in
my butt. Like, what the heck?
Stab in the ass.
Yeah, stab in the ass.
Wow. It just does not end with this guy.
This guy has so many, and it's just one thing after the other.
It's one thing after the other.
And it was so deep, you know. It was really, the wound is really, short.
Guess you're lucky it was only a one-inch blade.
No. So the cut is, this wide, right?
Yeah.
But it went really deep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, sometimes, I have, sometimes, I think it kind of, touched my bone or something.
Mm.
I don't know what happened, but, sometimes I feel the stink, you know.
You can still
the sting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whenever I try to walk, it kind of shoots right through my legs.
Oh, man.
I don't know what happened. Yeah. Well, I hope it's fine. But
I think, Charles.
Yeah.
I'm so happy you're in America.
Least of your worries, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can now tell some people that, I met a guy from North Korea who stabbed in the butt.
Stabbed in the ass.
Yeah, right.
Well, what I thought was really interesting was when we were in the car, there were all kinds of little details that you don't get from other people either. Of course, when we're in North Korea, let alone even from other defectors, because he was on the street for so long. You were on the street for so long, seeing street crime, drug dealing, prostitution. There, and I think somebody who's like a government official that flies to China and then says, "I'm not going back home," they don't necessarily know any of this stuff because they don't see it. They're in an office somewhere.
Right. But I'm not about the drug dealings. But
we were talking about meth in the car.
Oh yeah, meth in the car.
Oh, if you count meth, then
there's a lot of methamphetamine.
In North Korea, especially people with money. You know, North Korea makes the meth. You know, in Hamgyong, it's the factory is there, right? So a lot of people does that, meth. You know, and
just recreationally for fun, they do it.
For fun, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, and then some people they just off for 3 days, you know. And I've also met a lot of people who's done meth, right, in Thailand when I was in the refugee camp, because I met a lot of North Korean refugees, and they're just talking about it. It's just mind-blowing, you know. It's what? Some people laugh all the time, you know. Some people it's clean, but I'm not promoting the drug, you know. I'm not doing anything, but it's just
So there's a lot of meth, a lot of prostitution, and a lot of butt stabbing.
A lot of butt stabbing.
The side of North Korea we just
side of the very lower, you know, very. Because, you know, you can't, if you have money, you can bribe out of your way, you know. There's a lot of because police officers, they don't even care, you know, because they don't even get paid enough, you know. So whenever they see the crime,
a chance to get some
it's an opportunity
money, right?
For them. Yeah.
So even the prostitution, it's where I'm came from, where I'm from. I'm not talking about whole North Korea, but some major cities, the prostitution is really big, you know, with girls with flowers, you know. When I was younger, you know, when I was back in the days when I was living on the street, you know, I've seen a lot of ladies with flowers, you know. That means they're prostitutes, you know. And it's really sad to see that, you know. But, you know, you have to find a way to survive.
That's right. Like I promised, leaving us on a high note. But, Charles, seriously, thank you so much, man. It was a pleasure getting coffee, In-N-Out, and some serious North Korea stories. You have been through the ringer. You're 24, but at least you got a bright future here in the States.
Yeah, yeah. If I work hard and smart, you know.
That's right.
I can achieve my dreams.
You know it.
Thanks for inviting me here, and it was my pleasure talking about my life story. And you know, I feel we are lucky, you know, to be here to share my story too. You know, because there's a lot of other people that didn't make it here.
Didn't make it out. Yeah.
No, thank you.
No problem.
So, Jason, were you disappointed? I know that this was. I told you this was interesting.
It's not interesting, man. Edge of your seat excitement.
Yes. This is, I just can't believe it. And the fact that he's not resentful, bitter, upset, totally effed up in many ways, it's just amazing. How do you, I just can't believe it. And he just took it all in stride. And I think part of it is he grew up in that repressive society and was an orphan. So he essentially had just already been in such a hard situation that escaping from it was just kind of the natural way to conclude. It was, what else are you going to do? Right.
He seems rather well adjusted after all that he's been through.
Yeah, he's a computer programmer now. He codes. He lives in L.A. like a normal guy. He's got a girlfriend. I mean, it's just surprisingly well adjusted for a kid who escaped from North Korea and then just got schlepped straight into high school. One thing that I just think is interesting is they just put him in a high school and he didn't speak any English, no clue what's going on, but at least he wasn't in North Korea, right? Although exactly. A public high school in LA, I don't know, also a little dodgy depending on where you end up.
That's true. They're not going to shoot you for not putting your book in your locker properly.
No, they'll shoot you for something else.
Something else,
yeah,
true.
Unfortunately. Great big thank you to Charles Rue. He is just an amazing force, and I expect great things from him in the future. I think he's going to be doing a speaking tour. Wouldn't surprise me if he ends up with a book or a movie or something like that, for sure. And if you want to know how I managed to find, book, maintain relationships with all these great and interesting people, I use systems. I use Tiny Habits as well. Check out our Level 1 course, which is free, over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. That's advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. The problem I think that a lot of business owners and individuals have is that we're not able to make up for lost time when it comes to relationships, networking, building connections. The number one mistake I see people make is postponing this, kicking the can down the road, and not digging that well before they get thirsty. And once you need relationships, you're just way too late. It's too late to make them. These drills are designed to take just a few minutes per day. It's the type of habit that we can ignore only at our own peril. It's the stuff I wish I knew 10, 20 years ago. It's not fluff. It is crucial. And I'm giving it all to you for free here at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. Speaking of building relationships, tell me your number one takeaway from Charles Rue. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, doing a lot more on Instagram these days, little instructional videos and things like that. And don't forget, if you want to learn how to apply everything you learned here today from Charles, make sure you go grab the worksheets, also in the show notes, at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Jason DeFilippo. Show notes by Robert Fogarty. Special thanks to Gabriel Mizrahi for joining me on the interview here today. Worksheets by Caleb Bacon. Booking, back office, and last minute miracles by Jen Harbinger. And I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something that you love or use, which is hopefully in every episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. Got a lot more in the pipeline. Very excited for what's coming up in the future here. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. Before I forget, I want to invite you to our new flagship program, Advanced Human Dynamics. This is going to be a 3-day, insanely hands-on scenario and behavior change, body language and nonverbal communication, profiling, dark psychology, influence and persuasive communication, counter-influence, counter-manipulation awareness and prevention techniques. Very 007. We've got a lot of military and intelligence personnel that we've been teaching this to. Personal value development, interpersonal relationships, the secrets behind reaching out to and connecting with influencers and potential mentors in your industry, as well as business and personal relationship development. As you're aware, most people go to events, they forget everything. Not this one. This event, we are focusing on behavior change for the majority of this, and we've got activities afterwards to hammer things on home. This event aims to be one of the best and most powerful educational experiences of your personal and professional life. So reach out to us at advancedhumandynamics.com. You can email me, Jordan@advancedhumandynamics.com, or give us a call, 408-805-5520. That's 408-805-5520. I'm looking forward to seeing you there.